When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks to Raycon Wireless Earbuds for supporting FilmSack. Raycon Earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. For a limited time, get 20% off your order at buyraycon.com/FilmSack.
He loses his seat, goes through the windscreen, head first straight into the tree, right? And then bounces back through the windscreen. Now, by the time we got to him, he was just sitting there trying to scream with his face ripped off. What's the matter?
Not hungry, am I?
Look what's turned up for Sunday dinner.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, my pretties, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 490. This goes out on the weekend of Sunday, November 22nd, 2020. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. He is the Knight Rider Dunaway.
Oh, hi. I am the Knight Rider. Oh, hi. Listen, honey. I'm really tired. I've been out on the terminal psychotic roads of Australia tailgating injustice in my post-apocalyptic Ford Falcon pursuit vehicle, sweating balls in these leather pants for 3 days, and trying to figure out if my boss is a shirtless ex-wrestler or a French poodle dressed up as a police chief. Both were equally insane. So if you could just give me a minute, I just want to take a shower, grab a bite to eat. I would be more than glad to satisfy your needs. Oh, do I want to listen to you having at the sax? I thought you said the sex. No. I do not want to listen to you having at the sax unless you play it sexy. What's that? That's the only way you can play the sax? Then by all means, sex up that saxophone. Okay, we gone, Randy.
I sense a new pattern each week. We're going to get a Randy after Brian's Randy thing. Also with us, speaking of Randy, he likes ripping toes as well. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott.
Brian. And to all the rest of you, thank you for coming. This is indeed the casting call for the movie we're making, and we're pleased to announce that you do not have to audition. Every one of you who showed up have been awarded parts in this film. I am not Mr. Miller. I'm the producer. Mr. Miller is the one you might have spotted outside pointing a 35mm camera at you as you all arrived. And he was also getting footage of some of you talking to each other and, remarkably, two of you dancing in the middle of the street. So I'm pleased to say that as of right now, we've already shot 20% of the film. Now, before we get started on the rest, I need all of you to grunt your acceptance to the following three rules for being in this movie. Number one, you will not get paid any money. Mr. Miller arranged some financing for this project, but he spent it all in a chop shop in Melbourne making two entire cars. Number two, you will not be provided any wardrobe or makeup or hairstyling or motorcycles. You will provide all of those yourself, and the movie will look however it looks as a result. Number three, you are required to leave now if you have ever read any American comic books from the past few years about a cop whose family is murdered by motorcycle gangsters, turning him into a murderous vigilante. Anyone? Good. We will never speak of this again. And action!
Wow. That sums it up pretty well. But we got one more. And it comes from Brian. He's the first road warrior done. Ibbot. Yeah. God dang it. We do it again. I go away for a week and I F it up. One more time. Yeah. Brian, he's the first road warrior Ibbot.
Close enough. What's this I hear about you and Charlie? No, I think now is a perfectly good time for us to have this argument. Yeah, this police chase is going on all around us, but your perceived infidelity is way more important for us to discuss. No, we're right next to a highway, but I think it's totally fine that you let your toddler wander into the street because, for Pete's sake, what's going on with you and Johnny? I hear you two went to the cop bar where the silly putty stretch Lady Gaga performs live every night. And hey, there's Johnny right now driving a stupid camper that he keeps filled with saucepans. Hey, Johnny, what's this I hear about you and my girl in those saucepans? I better not see her you calling her again from that red telephone booth out the middle of nowhere. Hey, do you hear sirens?
That accent wavered back and forth a little bit. It was Cockney for a second.
Yeah, a little British, a little Australian. Yeah.
That's all right. That's all right.
How we all key on different weird things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, Ibbot spotted the phone box sitting up.
I did, which is really weird. How is that hooked up? There's like nothing else going on out there.
It was there to be run over with a car. That's why they did it. Literally. So we're talking about the 1979... I don't know if I'd call it a smash hit, but the breakout hit, Mad Max, by George Miller, director, who at the time was working as an ER doctor in Australia and had no plans for a future as a legendary director in Hollywood or otherwise. But this changed everything for him. And he literally paid for it with very little money and beer. That's some of the extras were literally paid with beer for appearing
in
the movie.
What kind of beer? Is it Foster's? That's Australian for beer.
Because that
right?
is Australian for beer. Yeah.
Australians get mad when we say that over here. They think that stuff.
Well,
sucks.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
You mean they get mad when we call Foster's beer, or when we use the phrase "that's Australian for beer"?
They don't like that phrase because they think that Foster's is terrible and it's a bad beer.
They probably have ads that we've never even heard that are like Ruffles. It's American for crisps. Right. You know.
I'm sure there's something like Ford as American as apple pie.
Yeah, right. Something that would annoy
That's
the
what
hell
all
out of
those
us.
Americans say.
Yeah. I like the Outback, they probably think that's ridiculous. Like the steak place. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure all that stuff drives those people crazy.
No,
but in 1979, what drove them crazy was this little film
Ford
called
Falcons.
Mad Max. That's right. $340,000 total was spent on this thing. 10 of which went to the to that point unheard of and still in film school or acting classes, Mel Gibson. More than that, most of the money went to those cars, like Randy mentioned. Those cars were very expensive to build. And really, it's like guerrilla filmmaking at its finest. It's a dude what has an idea, and he's like, all right, let me get my friends together. We're going to go make a thing, and we're going to do it when the police aren't around because we're going to film all our shit on roads we're not allowed to be on. And that's what makes this film, I think, still very interesting. Now, is this anything close to the work he would do later? No, not even close to the sequel.
Oh, no, there's no Happy Feet in any of this.
No, there's no Happy Feet. There's no Babe, Pig in the City. There's no Mad Max Fury Road. There's no any of that. It's just this start of a thing that very quickly would change.
And it's funny because all the other Mad Max films have a final scene that is the thing you go to the Mad Max films for, which is all of the cars chasing Mel Gibson's car or bus or truck or whatever. And they've all got, you know, these wacky techniques of how they're going to stop you and what they're going to do to your tires or how they're going to latch onto the car. And no, these guys all decide very cleverly to try and go one at a time after Mad Max.
We should split up.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Let's do a one-on-one every time. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's what's interesting is this feels like, okay, I'm going to go out on a limb and maybe it's just true by its very nature, or maybe I'm wrong. Okay, so I'm willing to argue about it if anyone has an altered opinion here. But this feels like a movie that is nothing like what would come later in the Mad Max franchise. And part of me wonders if this movie was meant to look sparse and empty, as empty and as sparse as they could make it look on the coast of Melbourne at the time, with some greenery and stuff, which would never show up in these movies again. They did all that because he couldn't afford anything else. Like, the budget was so low.
There was zero intention in this film other than to try to get to point A to point B with whatever means they had at their hand.
Right. Sure. But not only that, it was just a biker gang is bad movie and we need to fight them. And now Max needs revenge because his family was murdered by this biker gang. But it really doesn't have any other
gang revenge that just is so, you know, true.
Yeah,
you know,
but it just doesn't. It doesn't.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna kill your guy. Oh yeah, well, I'm gonna kill your guy back. And you know, is this gonna be
right?
And the other movies don't have to do with revenge either. It's more like escape and you know, getting this truck full of water, sand, across the across the desert, or helping these kids escape, or just surviving.
Right. It's all survival all the time, and running away from your insanity while the rest of the world goes more and more insane, which is kind of, you know, that's the fruition of it all. But it feels like he falls into it because he had no money. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of that is an accident. And what a happy accident, because I would argue, I mean, you guys know me well enough that I'm going to say this, but my favorite subgenre maybe of all time is dystopian future, apocalyptic, everything's burned out, everything's desert shit.
Ocean. Don't forget that too.
Sure.
I'm going to have all ocean.
Well, it's just still dystopian.
Still.
But not full of dirt. Yeah.
There's little doubt that Miller actually discovered that after basically making the film, though. Right. That's the thing.
Right.
Like, this is a film with a very, very short script. The goal was to have these great action pieces, right? These amazing stunts and special effects. And, you know, to almost make it a silent film, like the dialogue is very intentional and there's very little of it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like his constraints, like, as you said, the budget, which is basically zero, made him go film out in the country, made him film in places where there weren't, you know, electrical wires hanging on posts and this kind of thing. And it feels like at the end of filming, he realized, oh, you know, like, I need to say this is set in the future because in the future, I can explain why there aren't any helicopters or all, you know, whatever the thing is that's going to break the plot holes. Right. And like, that's cool and everything. But wow, he's lucky he figured that out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because
absolutely.
Adding on that little bit that's in the future makes the whole thing different.
Right. I agree. Like, the minute you figure that out, you now have a signature thing that, well, it certainly affected my life in very profound ways.
Right. I'm sure if you sat down with Miller during this time, he would give you, you know, he was just copying things that he had seen and then figure out a way to make it work within his film. Yeah. So, I mean, it seemed brand new to us because that was our, you know, it's 79 and all of us are of an age that it would fit perfectly within that frame. Anything before this would have probably passed us by, weren't old enough, and anything after that would just be, you know.
But this was all definitely at a time when we were getting things like The Warriors and, you know, other stuff like that. Like, theme gangs were the hot tip in the late 70s, early 80s. And this was definitely one of those where that biker gang was just like a weird theme gang. We wouldn't get to a point for a while where gangs were, you know, horrible, awful, bloodthirsty creatures with a bunch of war boys and irradiated landscapes and all that stuff would just come later.
But what exactly was their theme other than just being dusty Australians?
That's a good point. It doesn't go all in like having a baseball team. And
exactly. Now, these are the Hispanic gang.
It was characters within the gang. So there wasn't really theme gangs, but I will go with you on that. There was characters there's Monkey Boy who wears the monkey thing, and everything he does is, you know, he's climbing on stuff. Everybody had to grab a hold of a theme.
They were kind of the X-Men, right? I mean, they all had, you know, it was the guy from Little Rascals, Froggy. heard of the top of the show.
And Toll Ripper, of course, famously Hugh Keyes Byrne, who played Immortan Joe all these years later in Mad Max Fury Road. So,
which one is he?
He's the main bad guy. He's Toe Ripper. So that dude with all the
ripper.
Hair.
I wanted to call him Toe Ripper.
Well, that's his name in the thing.
Toe Cutter.
I keep saying Ripper.
Yeah, it's Toe Cutter. I like Toenail Ripper just as much. I don't know which is more scary.
I keep saying Toe Ripper for some reason.
Toe Ripper. I don't know.
You look at that GIF in the chat or in our Discord, Brian, that last one I put in there where he sits up, that's him.
Yeah.
That's a Morton.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that one.
I did not realize that.
Yep.
You even mentioned that last week and I forgot about it. I forgot to kind of look unrecognizable, obviously, because he's got the big old thing in on his face in Fury Road. But is it the same character or is it just the same?
No.
Just the same.
It's a different
actor.
Character, right?
Yeah. Totally different.
Character. Yeah. I guess it couldn't be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's any. That's the other thing with Mad Max movies. Now that I look back at them all, for the good for the bad and for the in between, there's no timeline.
You know,
I think for me at least, Immortan Joe is a Toenail Ripper.
You know what? I think I'm going to go back and say, go ahead.
What is the word Immortan about? Like, he survives all of this previous stuff.
Yeah, but we're filling that all in. Like, what I'm saying is there's no canon that exists where it says these are the two characters.
Right. Yeah, there's no direct canon, but I'm with you, Ibbot. It would make sense because everybody that got killed in car accidents in this, he just didn't get killed, they just got maimed.
Right,
and then he was the
guy who eyes bulged out, hit the front of the semi God. Thing.
That was great.
That was great. Yeah.
So here's,
I just want to say, for me, Hugh Keyes Byrne, his performance was the best thing in the movie.
Oh, he's great. He's great.
He's sitting on the beach. He's just talking about whatever's on his mind. He's perfect.
His blanket.
Right.
So there's a whole, as you might imagine, there are miles of Reddit posts saying, could Toe Cutter have survived and become Immortan Joe? They're constant back and forth. So. Here's the thing. Director and writer, you know him as George Miller, the famous filmmaker who made this movie. He said they are not. They are two villains in this world. Yeah. So it makes sense to me that they're not. But I love that they recast him. What a great homage it is to where all this started, to put him in there again.
Totally.
And all that. And I know that there are other people on the crew that were there in the original thing as well. But I think actor wise, that's pretty much your guy. But imagine playing, certainly in this movie, if you look at it and go, okay, who's the most memorable character here? Well, it's him. And who's arguably at least one of the most memorable characters in Fury Road. And it's totally Immortan Joe. That's a big deal. So I say hats off to Hugh Keyes Byrne for his fantastic portrayal of Toe Cutter Ripper Jr.
It's a Toenail Clipper Jr.
It's especially amazing when you get some good acting out of someone under these conditions, right? Like, this film was not made inside a studio, where people are comfortable and they're living in trailers and catered to and so on, this was totally seat of your pants. Go sit down there in the sand and start talking kind of filmmaking. And somehow the edit, it brings it all together.
There's also crazy danger too, right? Like, they're going to roads where they don't have permission. They haven't done any of the proper stuff because it's expensive and time consuming and all of that. They would go at times where they were sure there weren't cops around, and they would really rapidly film these crazy car sequences, which, by Fury Road standards, barely any, but for its time, there are big stunts in here that are still pretty impressive. That car flying through that trailer is something else. And the one where it's got like a booster on the back and it's kind of skipping down the road, that's also just trippy. I can't believe they pulled that stuff off. But they're doing it like at the seat of their pants, and they've all got radios. What I read was
their leather pants.
It says the crew would close roads without filming permits. So they'd literally close roads so people couldn't get down the things. And then they'd use walkie-talkies. But they'd have to change frequencies the time because the police radio pick it up.
Give me a normal Melbourne person going down the road, and then this film crew stops them. What do you think they're gonna say? Do you think an accent for that? You got a pissed off attitude.
Let me see my Melbourne. Uh-huh. Hi, what do you think you're doing out here?
There's something.
You're filming something.
You almost hit my red telephone booth.
I've already said this, and I wrote this more than once, the word competent, really competently filmed. Mm-hmm. Miller is working with actually good equipment. I don't understand how he got it.
Mm. There's a story behind that.
Mm. Okay, great. I'm sure there is. Everything about this movie, there's a story behind
it. It was all broke stuff that he purchased it really cheap from another film.
Mm. Oh, so, really? And then fixed and used for this?
Yeah, they were going to dispose of most of it because the big budget film that had used it, a lot of the equipment got damaged, but it was still functional. Mm. So that he just kind of band-aided it together.
I freaking love that, dude. What's great about that story is that by the end of filming, or as the filming progressed, and they did it all in like 2 weeks, but toward the end, some of the Victoria police were interested and thought it was interesting, and then would help them close roads and escort vehicles and stuff. Like, there's something about that where the rules don't apply. The OSHA violations aren't there. There's no, there's not some big group of stuntmen with their own unions that are like complaining about conditions and all this bullshit you usually have to go through and all the paperwork. It just isn't there. Now, is that good for, you know, a thriving industry like the film business? No, but for this project, it's like kids and a video camera in the 80s running through the hills making a horror movie. I love that kind of thing.
So I'm going to take on what you have said right there. I'm going to add on, this is another one of those movies where I never saw this one because I had seen the second one first and didn't want to go back. Yeah. And I did eventually go back and watch it.
Yeah.
But I actually thought the second one was the first one. I saw The Road Warrior and for those of you outside the United States, that's what it was called here.
Yeah.
And I thought like Rambo, like it started with The Road Warrior and then it turned into his name, Mad Max. Mm-hmm. And so I never saw Mad Max. And I don't think I've ever seen Beyond Thunderdome either.
Oh, you should see Beyond Thunderdome. You should see
it. You are in for a pleasure, my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a good time.
Grab your saxophone. You're about to be.
I mean, none of these, for the record, none of these are Fury Road quality, like level. But you got to see them all. And really, who runs Bartertown stuff is worth it alone.
Let's analyze that, though, because are you talking about technical filming quality? Are you talking about...
I mean everything.
Storyline depth.
Look, feel, tone, editing.
Road Warrior for me, and maybe it's nostalgia, but there's such a... It's up at the top for me with Fury Road as far as, like, if I were to put all four of these in order. And sadly, Mad Max would be the fourth one. The lowest one, but
easily
it raised up from the only other time I've ever seen this, because I think I was purely expecting, all right, well, it's going to be another Road Warrior movie, because I think I definitely saw it after Road Warrior, but I might have even seen it after Beyond Thunderdome, thinking, all right, well, Mad Max is going to be more of the same, and it really wasn't, and it felt slower, and I was really wanting some of the same kind of action that I saw in the first movie the other two movies, But Road Warrior for me has a level of, we've talked about this with movies before, a level of discomfort that I feel off the edge throughout the whole film. And I don't know if I have that with Fury Road as much as I have it with Road Warrior. And it really adds to the feeling of Road Warrior.
That was the weird thing for me. This movie should have had a lot more fear in it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. It's almost like he's so good at these shots and getting nice performances out of his principals that you don't actually feel the fear you should. Like, okay, so one of the biggest disconnects in this film for me was the fact that it's supposed to be in the future and there's supposed to be a little bit of a breakdown of society. That's the only explanation for these motorcycle gangs just roaming around at will, right? The army doesn't come in and stomp on them because the army doesn't exist now or something like that. Yeah. So you have to put that aside. But then they're like, we're going to go to the store and there's a store and it's working. So, you know, people still have money. They still have electricity. You know what I'm saying? Like, so there's a disconnect there and that disconnect where you're being reminded constantly, oh, it's actually not that bad. They don't live in a society that's broken down that much. Mm-hmm. It papers over this woman walking through the woods being hunted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
that should be terrifying.
Yeah.
When she says, I'm going to drive off on my own. I'm going to leave you here at the chop shop and drive off on my own with the baby. And you know she's being hunted. Like, you should be scared. But the fact is, they're not living in a society that's totally scary. You know what I mean?
Right. It's a lawless society, but there's still, you know, there was still stores and things and, you know, Western times, right?
Right.
Watch those all the time. Is this a little more lawless?
So it seems like, again, it's one of those things like Miller just wasn't thinking that far ahead, right?
No, they're just whipping it out. They're just cranking it. And there's something really visceral and fun about that. And it makes me wonder if the reason I love Fury Road so much, or Road Warrior for that matter, is that that visceralness, that intensity now has a budget and other factors that make it so you can fully realize what's in your head more so than you could with your little guerrilla filmmaking tiny movie that you made. And it was all in there, and we're seeing bursts of it. It's like, whoa, look at that moment, or look at this. I can't believe they got that shot, or whatever. And then it's filled in with a bunch of other cheesy stuff, like him at home with his wife. Is just all that stuff was just throwaway, terrible. The music was bad, like all of that thing. But the bits of brilliance,
the home with his wife. Yeah. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I hated all that, but the moments of brilliance were like, oh, there's more here to this, and it's just because there's a rawness to it. So now that he's a big shot and can do whatever he wants and make his own ticket, it's just about spending as much money as you need, getting the right people you want, and now you can just make whatever you want. And so, that's great. Like that, what a great way to start your career. And there's a lot of other examples of this. Like I would argue that Sam Raimi, and we talked about this with Evil Dead, like that's an origin story for a director and a style that was all about them doing the thing they wanted to do and not being constrained by Hollywood restraints. And I'd love that. That stuff always turns out better for me.
Do we see that as much now? I mean, it seemed like the late 70s kind of, or the 70s itself, it seemed like there was a whole generation of directors coming up, and a lot of them were trying to operate outside of the Hollywood studio market, but eventually kind of crept in, even Spielberg and Lucas. So I'm just curious, do we see that anymore at all? Is it impossible to really distribute a movie to that point without Hollywood involvement? Or
I mean, look, there's never been, and everyone always says this, like actual filmmakers say, I think the next generation of filmmakers are going to be insane because they've all got stuff in their pocket that's good enough to make an entire film and they can do it without any constraints.
But distribution is the problem, right?
Right. Well, not just distribution, but also what are you doing creatively that's different? Like what can you actually offer? If I've got a phone or a camera in my pocket that's more powerful than anything Spielberg ever owned, but what ideas do I have that can?
So like Hardcore in the end, Henry, that's what right? Matters. That was kind of that guerrilla style filmmaking that it was taking advantage of using just everyday equipment, right? And a new idea of how to do it, but kinda, it really didn't.
Kind of, but
anything,
it was also
right?
It was also a bit of a gimmick, right? Goof. Like they were just saying, hey, what if it was this first person thing this whole time? Yeah, hey, cool idea. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying it's harder now than ever to like really grab somebody with something new.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know. So like all of the tools available to everybody, you still have this problem of what brilliant idea is going to come out of it. And they still happen. Certainly, there will be a new generation of creators and filmmakers. And they are right now. There's some 15-year-old with a iPhone blowing his parents' minds, and one day we'll become the dude, But right now, I just don't know what that is. I don't know what that looks like.
I'd like to see a whole class graduate, because that's what I think I see. I think I see a lot of individuals slowly creeping in and working through the system, but I don't see like a whole, a whole class of filmmakers just splashing the scene right now.
Yeah.
We see people on TikTok every single day doing things that would have been considered truly great short films 30 years ago. And I am not saying that the industry is going to move to a 60-second format or some nonsense like that. That's not
right. It's crazy. What, like a 9-minute format? That would be insane. Who would do something like that? But it would fail. Yeah.
But I am saying that you can easily see how there is this revolution coming among young filmmakers where they are doing sort of the 2020s version of what George Miller was doing in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there again, I think it's just too early to say, because every time somebody says, oh, we've done it all, then someone does something else. I'm not a believer that anything ever stops. But
I've always loved this Cheech and Chong joke where they're pretending to be Hollywood producers, and one of them says, the kids these days, they're music producers, the kids these days, they're so hung up on the lyrics. I always think of that because, like, it's true. And we are all very hung up on the script for this movie. And that's a shame, because it doesn't really do the movie any justice to be worried too much about what the characters are saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? Because most of it I can't understand. And I couldn't understand also whether or not originally this was dubbed with American voices. Now, what we watched on Netflix, I didn't do any research. Does anybody know if there was any partial dubbing?
We saw the restored version. So there was this movie was made. It was distributed in Australia only, and then it was successful enough that they were able to distribute it outside of Australia. And for American audiences, someone dubbed American voices over the entire thing, and that's how it was seen by Americans for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And then in 2002, they put an end to that, and they restored it globally to the voices that we heard.
Yeah. And I went hardcore. I did not turn on the subtitles. I wanted to, but I did not. I said, no.
I almost did because I just, it was, there were moments of not just it's not that the accents were a problem for me, just the recordings of the voices were just kind of bad.
Right.
Some of them intentionally, you know, just mumbling.
Yeah. Incoherent. I mean, he's known for, you know, look at something like Road Warrior or Fury Road or any of the future stuff. There's not a lot of coherent human beings. Like everybody's a little bit off and whatever. The most coherent person in the room is usually Max, and it's usually done through narration.
And he's usually not very coherent.
No. And this is the other thing too. All the Mad Max films outside of this one feature narration from Max at the beginning and the end, usually at the end usually the beginning.
Yeah.
This one has none of that. So you don't really get the idea that he's like the whole concept. This is what I love about the movies that came after, is it's not about this guy who's on a revenge kick for his wife. It's not about any of those things. It's about a guy who is trying his hardest to survive and maintain the last bit of humanity and semblance of sanity that he can, and that everyone else around him are actually the crazy ones. So when we say Mad Max, we're not talking about him being angry. It's more of the old mad, like crazy. Mm-hmm. And that madness, ironically, is not his. It's everyone else's and him trying to stay away from it.
And I want to be clear. That. I do not think George Miller was sneaking off to a tent and huddled over copies of The Punisher.
No, of course not.
I really don't.
Of course not.
But he did absolutely employ every trope that you could think of for this script. You know, like, I mean, it feels like this goes back to Shakespeare and like Romans 12 out of the Bible. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he is not doing anything new in terms of plot. You know,
well, he loves films, and that's what you know pushed him to do this, was just love for films and saying, you know, I think I can do that.
Yeah,
I'm looking to see when Jerry Conway introduced The Punisher, because it couldn't have been that much. Oh, he's 74. Okay, I was thinking it was a little bit closer to when this was released.
I don't think Punisher has a really strong and introduced backstory at first. He's just a character, but he does definitely get that typical Punisher backstory in the 70s. Like, it's something that George Miller would have known. I don't think he did.
And there's a ton of Liam Neeson movies today.
There's a lot of parallel thought going on, as you know, we know even today, is you can have an idea, go on the internet, look it up, and you can have almost a complete idea and it'll match exactly what somebody else is already doing. I mean, it's just comes out
right.
a lot of times as a viewer, I don't want to really care. Like watching this movie, I loved the scenes of the sort of newlywed couple. They're in their house out in the country, and the reason I did was because I love the movie Interstellar, the Christopher Nolan movie. And as soon as I saw their life there in their house out in the middle of nowhere, I thought of Matthew McConaughey's house in Interstellar, and I thought, I wonder if Christopher Nolan was kind of thinking about Mad Max. Like, I wonder if that was in his brain. And like, so that entertains me. But I'm not saying that as viewers we should you know, take ourselves out of the film and try to find those connections, because I don't think there's a big, huge, you know, like homage. The Interstellar thing is totally this whole other story, right? But it's like, having seen them both now, I appreciated one more because I have.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Instead of us thinking, you know, oh, why did so-and-so, I've seen this before, and why did so-and-so steal this from that? Maybe we should be, like you said, kind of looking at ourselves and going, well, you know what? I enjoy both of these artists and their different takes on a fairly similar idea.
Everything's iteration. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
It's whether you're talking about movies, television, books, video games, like forms of art and story expression. Are all, you boil them down to like three or four plots.
And it's why it all works, because if as a viewing audience, we can't understand the language of the artist, which is a common language, which we've all, you know, we all have experienced the human experience, then it's going to fail anyway. So, I mean, of course, we all as creators also create things that are similar.
You're also going to look at, like, you know, if you don't iterate on something, and basically you're just presenting new packaging, and that's I think if you don't do that proper, then you're screwed. The whole reason people love these new Marvel movies, the MCU stuff for the last 10 years. And the reason those work so well is because they're repackaged stuff we know already. They're repackaged spy films. They're repackaged adventure films. They're repackaged versions of something we've seen before. And the newness comes from, oh, all right, so the second Captain America is basically a 70s spy thriller, but with superheroes in it. And that works. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a new way to do it. And I'm okay that we humans are simple in this way and that we only have about 10 plots we can handle. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. It's fine. Just repackage it. Make it seem fresh again. Give us a new twist on it.
I mean, we never talk about this, but, you know, we don't get exposed to a lot of... Okay, so let's take another society that has some really strong storytelling. The Japanese, they have some really strong storytelling. And as an American viewer, you're used to watching Hollywood formula. And when something's redubbed or introduced to you from outside your culture, it's like, what is this story structure doing right now? I don't even understand. I don't even speak this story language. And it takes some adjustment too. So we never get a chance to talk about that kind of thing.
I agree with you all, but I'd really like a trope alert because there was something that blew my mind. So you're being hunted by a motorcycle gang, and maybe you don't know it. You know, maybe you don't know it. I don't think I knew it. You're off at grandma's estate, which has these really beautiful nut trees everywhere.
I thought it was Aunt May.
And sure, whatever. And you realize I haven't seen the baby in a while. You come running outside. You come running outside. You haven't seen. You look where the baby is. You start screaming for the baby. That motorcycle gang is standing around 20 feet away from you. And for minutes, you don't turn that direction. You don't look. You don't look all around you. You only look the other direction. Then you turn around and look, there's motorcycles parked right there next to the barn. How did you not see that? What is wrong with you?
Well, the kid's name was Australian for kid, right? Wasn't that
Sprog
or something? Yeah, Sprog. Yeah, Sprog. So I'm like, they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't care. Child.
Right. Listen, he was distracted. He was furiously looking for He was looking for his kid, and he didn't see the motorcycles. And makes sense. Totally.
No, it does.
There's a trope of not noticing things that just drives me absolutely crazy.
It happened a couple of times, like when Max gets shot in the leg when he's pursuing the biker gang at the very end after he killed his wife. He you know, they're luring him into a trap. We've got the boy, or we got the one biker who's ran off the road, apparently. And Max gets out of his car. He looks around and he starts walking towards him. And all of a sudden he gets shot. And it's like the other bikers were just standing there. There's nothing but open fields. Where were they at?
I'd like to call this trope snuck up on you face to face, because it's like later in that scene on the estate. You know, the woman is faced off with the biker gang. They're all threatening her. They've got the baby, right? And grandma has a gun and sneaks up on them face to face. She's right in front of them, and suddenly they notice her pointing a gun at them. Like, how did she sneak up on you? She's in front of you. Drove me crazy.
I kept waiting for Big and Stupid to do something, though. I hate that Big and Stupid didn't do anything.
Yeah, right? You need Big and Stupid to do more in movies. That's a rule. He broke that rule.
He did. He's out in the woods scaring people, laughing about it. He just kind of gets and runs and hides.
He adheres to that rule in other movies. There's plenty of Big and Stupid that do what Big and Stupid does in other George Miller productions. But in here, that was a MacGuffin, man.
He just disappeared. We never saw Big and Stupid again.
Mm-hmm. He's the chick in the bucket. In fact, here, enjoy that.
Maybe he's the one. It's dangerous to leave a bucket lying around?
Yeah, there he is in the bucket. Just sitting in there. I am
balls of justice.
Yep.
I am on TV tropes right now, and I'm adding the trope snuck up on you face to face.
Nice.
Can you? I didn't know you could add tropes to that site. Is that true?
Oh, it's a wiki.
It's like a wiki.
Huh. Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Oh my God, we're going to add some more tropes.
look at it. we were responsible for someone adding chicken a bucket to the TV trailer.
Really? No way. No way. That's cool. Know that. That's awesome. And look, no,
I got to go see that.
Ruining websites one day at a time here on the show.
Hey, you know, at least it's not the Sylvester Stallone and Bruce Willis were both considered for the role of Mad Max.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so I got some.
And I fell in love with this movie. Okay, so I watched, you know, like I said, I didn't watch this. This wasn't the first of the Mad Max series that I watched, but I went back and watched it later, and I just fell in love with the cars in this. I mean, they had the later versions, but it had like, they were so modified. Those Ford Falcons were so modified.
Yeah.
They didn't really like a Ford Falcon. Now, the original one had like just ground effects kits in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that they were like that yellow.
Oh, they're so nasty. Yeah,
they're really cool. Did they really have like different vehicles for different purposes? Like this one is the pursuit vehicle. This one is the intercept. Like, cause they had the words printed on the back. Like they had a different role for each.
And they actually, like, you could tell when the sky would change, like the time of day would change suddenly in the middle of an action sequence, that they would actually use the same car for two different car roles. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, okay. So Miller had to shoot this film basically in order of the cars being destroyed. He had to get all of the whole car shots made first, right? Mm-hmm. And then the very last shots of the film were of those cars getting destroyed. He didn't have a lot of, you know, backup cars to murder.
I love how subtle the accident. I love how subtle Miller was with the results of each of these car accidents that were maiming, because the guy who got chopped in the throat, I thought, oh, he's dead. You know, he's about to die. But later on, no talking about it or anything. He's just walking around with like, yeah, this voice. Right, right, right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I was like,
because he got in the throat with a saucepan that was in the camper, went through the window. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's, that would translate better later. Like he does these. I like awkward characters that feel like you're like, oh my gosh, what is this thing doing here? What is that guy? What is his deal? And he does that like crazy in future projects. I would point to the little. So all the brothers, the sons of Immortan Joe in Fury Road, are great. He's got this big hulking beast of a man, Rictus, who should be next in line, but he's dumb as a rock. So all the strength, no brains. He's got a son who is horribly disfigured, birth defects, all kinds of other issues. Tiny little guy about the size of a potato who has to look through everything through a spyglass. Giant brain on him. Can't physically do anything. And it's disconcerting. You see him sitting in that little pod chair and you're like, oh, dude, what happened to him? Like, I love those things. And George Miller does some of my favorites. And this movie has those as well. I do wish more of them were fleshed out. Like in some ways, Toe Cutter is just too, I don't know. He's too very, standard. Yeah.
And you never know whether to be scared or not, because at one point in time, they seem fearless and then they do all just back away when May comes at them with the gun. And, you know, it's like, okay, they're not. At some points they seem like they're not afraid of death at all. They're like, oh yeah, death is not even a factor. And then other times they're like, oh, I don't want to die.
I so wish they hadn't gone with the trope of her getting one shot off and missing completely. If she had shot one of those guys, just one of them, just an extra, just shoot him. That would have been so much more entertaining in that moment.
Yeah,
it would have. But with that gun, it takes like 8 minutes to reload. It looks like.
Yeah.
You just got two because it's double barrel, right? She has shot one, and she had like another shot. Right? Is that how
unless it calculated that gun?
Right. Or, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know how guns work.
I don't know how guns work at all.
How do they work? But yeah, like what was I going to say? I had a thing to say. I forgot what it is. Oh, he would just get so much better at it later and give us things that would build worlds. Right now, this movie. Yeah.
I'm going to call you the George Miller apologist.
I know. That's I kind of am doing it, but I'm but I'm complaining about a thing, which is like in this film, the first one.
Yeah.
There's no world building. It's just biker gang versus people, and we don't know why necessarily. Yeah. And we don't really feel the sense that the world's falling apart in the way that we do.
There's
in the
world
later.
Deconstruction.
There's very little backstory that we have to fill in ourselves.
Right. It's just pretty standard and laid out for you. In the other movies, there is massive world building happening and you don't have to do much to see it. It's like, okay, well, the war boys, all right, it's a huge culture of not only war, but there's like a religious fervor about it. If they fight well, right, they go to the gates of Valhalla. So we're pulling from mythology and modern ideas and other things. And, you know, this king, god king they have in Immortan Joe, you know, all of that stuff isn't explained to us. We just know.
You know, so, you know, that was one of the things that I was trying to... This is the first time I've watched this film. Why not? this film in a way that was like critical. It's like, okay, I want to deconstruct the script, and I want to deconstruct the, you know, why is he named Toe Cutter? Am I going to get to see him cut toes? Because sure. I mean, if you name a character Toe Cutter, I expect at least some point in time, I expect him to see some toe cutting.
That feels like a pretty standard Miller thing, though. Like these characters that have these outlandish, bizarre names that probably do have a great backstory, but you're never given that backstory. So that is a thing. I guess he does have a little bit of fill in the gaps yourself.
I expect him to at least be looking at people's feet, take your shoes off, you know, something that kind of like escalated the tension.
Yeah.
As soon as we finish this ice cream, how about I cut off a toe?
Seriously, fill in the blanks yourself is so important, you know? Yeah. And like, you just reminded me, by the way, with the names of Taserface from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, Taserface.
Fill in the blanks, so important. Every single motorcycle in this movie is a Kawasaki. And they go to great lengths to cover that up. They put all sorts of like bolted on panels all on those different motorcycles. But every single one of them is a Kawasaki. And once you start to notice, oh, look at that. And, you know, when they wreck it, I can see the word Kawasaki on the side of the gas tank. Mm-hmm. When you start to notice, your brain is like, wonder why all the motor. And like for me, my answer was the motorcycle gang. They jacked a shipment of bikes at some point in the past.
Oh, sure. Right.
There was a shipment headed to Melbourne of Kawasaki bikes, and they jacked it, and they, you know, stole them all.
Yeah.
And like that kind of thing, if you know, like that's good for you as a viewer, I think.
I love filling the blank stuff that does it properly. Like if you don't do it well, you're just confused or something's contradictory. Like haunted house movies, they don't follow their own rules. I hate those, and they kind of drive me crazy the whole time, and I can't focus on the story. In his case, in the movies this guy makes, there's a simplicity to them which helps, I think. But the blanks are easily filled in. Like I'm not having a hard time connecting the dots, and more so in subsequent films. Like as soon as Road Warrior happened, that was not hard to fill in the blanks. Like I just knew, all right, burned out, horrible world. Somehow Max is still here. Things are shitty. They got gas over there. That guy wants it.
The guy with the hockey mask wants it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a lot clearer motivation when you say that everything involves cars, and then you go, oh, and there's a limit on fuel. Then it escalates. Then you have a real conflict going on. Whereas in this one, it didn't seem like anybody had any trouble getting fuel. They just wanted to steal it.
Yeah,
you know, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, they did this thing in the video. So I played the video game completely. I loved it.
Okay,
the Mad Max game. And there's this really great thing they do in there where they really lean into some of those ideas. For example, the cars are treated like temples by many of the people in that world. Like it's become a symbol of religion and power, and it matters that you have one that runs. And so to have one that runs, you need a mechanic who knows what he's doing. And those mechanics are almost like monks. They're like misshapen and, you know, burned and scarred, but they know the magic of what it takes to get a carburetor back to working order, or how to make a tire still work, even though you're just on the rim or whatever. Like weird stuff like that. They really lean into it in the game, and it really helped fill that stuff out for me because, you know, his car, Max's car, is nothing short of a holy relic in that world.
Right, right. And because it's the last V8, right?
Yeah,
And you can take that to the extreme. One of my favorite scenes in the film is when Max goes and confronts Underground Mechanic. And Underground Mechanic is on a creeper, and Max is like lowering the jack of the car over. It's so funny. Yeah. And it's like a great little scene. But from that moment on, man, things do not go well for Max.
No.
And it's like you could see something of like a moral conclusion from, you know what I'm saying? Like, ooh, he went and assaulted the godly mechanic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a theory in Reddit that this is all in his head. So when his kid and wife died, that society's kind of normal. Like, it's not that weird. They get killed by these bikers and he just loses it. And that everything in the future is a figment of his imagination. He's just seeing all this shit, like Thunderdomes and who runs Bartertown and all this. Like, none of it is actually happening. It's all in Max's head, which is a really weird thread to go down. But part of what I like about it is that people do this. I like that they go all in on wacky ideas because they get to fill it in. Therefore, they get to have their own ideas. If I was George Miller, I'd just be grinning at that. I would love that. Even if it was
Am I remembering correctly that there were flashbacks in a couple of the other movies where he remembers his wife and child getting killed? And
well, they're even in the new one. There's a scene where Tom Hardy's running through the... Well, actually, at the very beginning, flashes. There's
flames or something. Yeah,
And it's a little girl, or maybe it's a boy with long hair. I'm not sure. But it does have like a, why did you leave us, Max? Why did you, that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, right.
So he's always dealing with that stuff. But I like when they leave it vague so that we all sit around coming up with our own theories. That's fun. Like, that's fun for movies. I love that in science fiction.
Did they reveal in the film that she succumbed to her injuries? I had read later that she did. Yeah, but
that's in Wikipedia. But no, last you see of her, last that she's mentioned, it seems, is just seeing her on the hospital bed. And they're like,
It doesn't look good, but she'll be fine. The doctor said she'll be fine. Now, her arm was gone. I was like, oh, is that the revenge part? Did they run over her arm and to get back at the moron who threw the chain on the back of the back of the wagon and got his arm ripped off? By the way, shooting a bird whenever they shoot.
Right. Yeah. I love that it's like but, stuck on a chain with the middle finger out.
He's an idiot, though. He deserved that because he did it. She had nothing to do with that.
So exactly.
Don't blame her for your hand, you idiot.
It was also a little vague, the reason I read to kind of fill in the blanks, but the reason that they were listening in on his conversation with the mechanic when they were showing Max the brand new souped-up Interceptor. Right. And it was like, oh, okay, they're doing that as a bribe to keep him on the force, which clearly didn't work. But it almost seemed like it was like an entrapment situation where it was you're accepting this gift, and we can use this against you to keep you on the force later on.
Right.
Yeah.
There was definitely a see, and this is where the movie breaks down for me because there's too much organization there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there's not, enough, right. that's not, there's no chaos to that. That's people trying to retain people on the job.
Right. Like, yeah. It's not super dystopian. Yeah. Taking place in the halls of justice, but still not terribly dystopian inside.
Yeah.
Well, it's up the police chief. I mentioned him in the intro. His name was Fifi. He is just I was trying to figure out, I've seen that kind of character before, but I couldn't quite place it. Mm-hmm. Is it a trope character? I couldn't quite place the character, but it felt very familiar for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, there was definitely there were things like that in here. And also, like somebody said earlier, that the accents aren't really the problem. There's a lot of audio problems with this thing, though, just the way it's recorded. And so I'm sure there's story I didn't hear.
A lot of story on the radio. They have radios playing in those cars.
Right.
And there's so much that, like, if you turn, I went back and turned on the subtitles so I could understand what the lady on the radio was saying. And sure enough, it's all subtitled. You have tons of dialogue coming in from that dispatcher if you want to go read it.
Well,
I couldn't figure out why Knight Rider was so upset when he saw Mel Gibson's character. I assumed that they had, he knew it was Mel Gibson, but he heard it over the radio or something. I wasn't quite sure.
I don't know. He knew that Mel Gibson hated Jewish people, and he was really sad.
It was, Dean and I actually, I asked her that. I said, do you think Mel Gibson hated Jews even back here?
Like, right.
Yeah, you think so?
Even in his early 20s.
Is this that far back? Yeah. How far back does it go?
I mean, he was what, like 21 or 2 or something?
So young.
Yeah, very young, yeah.
He was like 2013. He was like a teenager. It was amazing to see how young he was.
Yeah, he was about to have a real career. He just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Check this out. I love this. So I haven't heard this interview, but I want to now. 2015 interview. They did post Fury Road's release. It was a show called the Jeff Goldsmith Podcast. George Miller was on it. said that it was not the intention when the script was written to set it in a post-apocalyptic world. This was done because they didn't have the money or extras and property or properly maintained buildings in order to cover for his production and value, or sorry, and value limitation. The title card was added to the beginning, explaining that the story was set after a world war. This accounts for why there is generally more of an established society in this film than any of the sequels combined. So yeah, like this again, another sign of like, yeah, we just didn't have any money. So
interesting.
It's a happy accident, is what happened.
And when we watched it, it didn't say after a world war. It just said sometime.
A few years in the future.
Yeah.
A few years from now, I think is the way they.
Yeah. What a smart way to do that, though.
Yeah, totally. Yes, because it doesn't lock you into
the 2020s,
to somebody going, oh, well, here we are at 2020 and none of that stuff has happened. Come on. Right.
Like even things like Blade Runner, which was set in what?
2040. Oh, the new one's 2049.
Yeah, the old one was
10-year difference or something, or 20-year difference.
Something like that.
Right.
Like they've leaned into it and it's fine. But I do that does annoy me. Like when you tell me the even in Star Trek where they jump out to 23rd century or whatever, I'm okay with that because I'm never going to see it. But they'll say things like, "Oh, the eugenics wars with Khan, that happened in 1997." I'm like, "Oh, geez, freaking 97! You all thought 97 was so far in the future, didn't you? Back in the 60s,
yeah.
So just do like this: say in the far flung future, or you know, Star Wars does it. Long time ago in a galaxy far, far away is such a great.
You've got no reference. You don't
know. Vague.
Be vague. I don't need dates. Just don't need them.
I don't need dates.
Nope. It doesn't help me. It does
it
nothing
doesn't
to the
help.
Thing.
It absolutely locks you in.
If you're going to say, hey, we're RoboCop. Cool. What's your deal? Oh, we're Detroit and it's the future. I don't need to know the date. Just that it's the future. That's it. Done. Go. Do what you got to do.
If we did unique names for every episode, I would insist that this one be called Fill in the Blanks, because that really is what we're talking about. Yeah. The magic of giving the audience some artistic control over what's going on.
And trusting them to have that power means that you have a responsibility to kind of nail it. And not be tempted to fill in some of those holes for them so that it jacks up the other holes. Like you got to be so confident in your source and just say, all right, I'm doing this thing. Here it is. Okay, audience, now you fill in the blanks. And if that works, that is kind of magic. It's great.
Yeah.
And low rent TV series get this wrong all the time. They want you to be dumb. And so they are constantly reminding you of what the characters' names are and why they're here and what their story is, you know? And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I hate that.
Right. And, well, you know, TV shows, I don't know. It's different with TV show because, like with a movie, it's all self-contained. But a TV show, you kind of have to almost make sure that if anybody just joins at any point in time, that they can at least have a good enough time to go back and watch.
Well, you know what?
Things.
It depends.
I'm not saying it's a good idea.
It depends on the show. Like if you're talking about the A-Team, I agree. Because the A-Team, they're like, wait, what are they doing? Oh, well, they're trying to get this bank to give the people our money back.
Yeah, you can watch any episode of the A-Team, and I've never watched an episode of the A-Team, and you know what's going on.
Right.
You're there.
And but the dumbness is, but if you're talking about something like Fargo, which I'm in the middle of the fourth season and loving every damn second of it, it's a complicated, messy story to tell. And if you're not paying attention, you're going to get lost. And I would rather have that though, because I don't want to be treated like I'm dumb. I want to do the work on my end to like hold on to the threads and pay attention to these characters. And if they've done their job right, then I'm hooked. And I am. But I think we're mostly talking about network TV these days. Their dramas are pretty dumb, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to watch Blue Bloods, they're going to remind you every 5 seconds about everything you already know. And, you know, and no offense, like Blue Bloods,
I have never seen a single episode of Blue Bloods.
My wife likes it because she likes TV she can
mustaches.
Sort of half ignore.
Yeah,
she likes Tom Selleck. Does Tom Selleck even have a mustache on that show?
Oh, yeah.
Does he even have a mustache?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, he does. He brought it back. Okay.
Yeah, he had to bring that back. You kidding? That other thing was not. You can't have a face without that for him.
I didn't know if it was back.
It would be such a mistake, though, for him to ever not have a mustache.
Sir, we hired your mustache, not you.
He's the opposite of all other people. All people shouldn't have a standalone mustache, except him. And he should never have anything but that.
Yeah.
Such a weird thing that guy's got going. Anyway.
Now we got to watch Quickly Down Under.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Yeah, or Alan Quartermain.
Or that. Oh, it's just not that thing we watched last week.
Now that we've seen, maybe too soon after Leave the Extraordinary Gentleman.
Yeah.
Too soon. All right. Let's do some clips, speaking of soon.
Whoa, before we do that.
Yeah.
Can I have a guess for what gross got out the most?
Oh, please. Oh, yeah. I got a tie, so let's see how you do. Play this first, I guess.
Gross.
All right, go ahead.
I think that's getting longer too. I think it's French Kissing the Mannequin.
Ding, ding, ding.
Really interesting.
All right. So French Kissing the Mannequin,
how about Ice Cream Licking?
That came close. Else. That's in third. But here are my two tops, because Brian got the right one. So Making Out with the Dummy was gross. Not because just kissing the dummies, whatever.
You don't know what's where that plastic has been.
But that dude is licking its nose and just eating its face. Yeah. It was foul. That's number one. Number two was a guy. There was a guy running away that had his pants off. And,
oh, yeah. He got raped.
Yeah, and his bum was all red, and it grossed me out.
Red bum.
Yeah, red bum.
Just got out. Did not know that.
Yeah.
That's
naked
that
red bum
list.
Guy. Yeah, he grossed me out.
Yeah, I didn't know red bums were a thing.
Red bums.
It was very.
So what is it? So baboons?
A little like that.
Yeah.
A little like that. I had a baboon once at a zoo walk up to the mirror, look at me, or the window, look at me, then turn around slowly and mush its butthole up on the thing.
I never got over it.
It was horrible. All right. Anyway. Well done, Brian. You know exactly what grosses me out. Also, I was afraid how far they were going to take it with that dummy. I kept thinking, oh, please, let's be done with the dummy, please.
And it's like licking surfaces in general. Like, that's always gross, but we're in COVID-19.
Yeah,
and so
it's hard not to put it in that perspective.
Yeah, you really notice it when somebody's licking a surface.
Plus, that guy did. Like, it was there, and he did. Even though it was clean.
Really, you can't fake that.
Right. And he really looked like he enjoyed it. And the sun was glancing off the spitty tongue that he had out, and it was hard to watch.
This reminds me of a question I've been wanting to ask Scott. Why is it when I hand you an apple, you're about to eat the apple, you're going to, every part of the edible part of the apple is going to go into your mouth, and that's fine with you. But if I hand you an apple and say, I need you to lick this apple, you're going to be like, I don't want to lick the apple.
Yeah, that would be, first of all, I think part of that is just it's a weird thing to ask, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, why? Sure. When has anyone ever asked you to lick an apple before? So that's number one. But even if it was more common, I mean, I would probably do it if I could just give me a minute to clean it, you know, like just to make sure it's not gross. But you're right. Yeah, I don't. I wash apples before I eat them anyway.
Yeah. Do you wash apples?
Just water, or do you use anything else?
Well, sometimes if there's water, I'll do that because I know, like, this grocery store we use does fresh produce stuff that's been sprayed, and I just rinse the spray stuff off. But sometimes if I'm just, there's the bowl, here's an apple, and it's me, I'll just rub it on my shirt. I don't care.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, if you got to rub it, you got to rub it in your shirt, right?
Yeah. Well, but rub it on your shirt. But if I said lick your shirt, you'd be like, no.
Right. I think licking an apple, even if you're intending to eat it, you're wanting to clean up more before you lick it than you would if you were just going to eat it.
Yes.
Yeah, because the purpose of licking it would be able to get whatever is off the surface, right? So that would be 100%
you're eat it anyway.
Germ.
Yeah, you could just eat it. Just eat it then if you're going to.
But, if you bite into it, then, you're getting mostly apple with a few germs. Where if you lick it, you're getting all germs, no apple.
But you're going to eat the whole apple anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But of course it does.
But I'd be more inclined to clean it if I'm going to lick it than I would to eat it. And I just feel like that's such a weird thing.
It is weird.
Like I said, I think it's not, because if you lick it, you're getting if you lick it, you're getting 100% germs. That's all you're getting. Whereas if you bite it, you're getting mostly apple with some germs. Now, at the end, when you do the math, you've got as many germs.
You're still going to have all the same germs.
Right. But when you lick it, you're just getting the germs.
So you think that the percentage, like if I take the germs in that slowly, like, along with the rest of the apple.
Right.
I'll eat hamburger meat knowing, that maybe a part of it is probably bugs. Probably got in the machine. I'm fine with that. But if you just said, here, eat just the bugs, I'm going to go, no, I need.
But if we say it's like, let's say it's not germs. Let's say it's just a little bit of poo.
A little bit of poo. Right.
A little bit of poo, whether you eat the apple all at once or you're licking the apple.
Right. If it's 99% If it's 99% hamburger meat and 1% poo, I'm going to eat it. But if you just hand me the 1% of poo and
you're
go, here,
you just get all the poo all at once.
Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm not eating that little
piece of
poo.
Okay, if somebody told me my hamburger has 1% poo, I'm not eating the hamburger. I'm not going near
well,
it.
Guess what, Scott? Guess what?
But would you lick it?
I mean, look, no, I understand what Dunaway is saying is that no matter what, I can go, whatever I eat today probably got some particulate of something in it. I get it.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know that going in and I'm not thinking about it. If you know, if you say to me, there is a quantifiable single percentage point of poo in this burger, please eat it.
Yeah.
F right off is what I'd say.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
I'm 100% with you on that.
I feel like you guys got away from my initial point.
Well, of course I did.
My point was not necessarily about the germs on the outside of the apple, but the act of licking it. Like if I make this fantastically cooked steak and then I cut off a piece of the meat and it's on my fork and I put it in my mouth, you're like, oh, he's eating steak. If I stop on the way to my mouth and lick the slice of meat, you're like, that's freaking weird. It's the licking for some reason.
It is odd maybe because maybe when somebody licks something, I feel like I've got to watch. Whereas if somebody's eating something, I observe it and I look away. When they're licking it, for some reason, I feel like I have to be engaged. Why is that? Maybe that's the problem.
But what if it's a thing that's normally licked? Like you wouldn't care if it was an oversized lollipop.
If it's ice cream, right.
Chupa Chupa lollipop. Or something. Yeah.
Right.
But in every one of those cases, if somebody said there is an ounce of poo in this, I'm still not eating. I'm just not eating it.
How about half an ounce?
Yeah,
half an ounce of poo.
No,
what's your poo threshold?
I don't have a poo threshold.
What do you think the Starbucks people would do if I went in there and got a cake pop and then just started licking it like it was a lollipop?
I would
laugh. Did you pay for this first?
I want to be there. I want to film this. I mean, that's a great idea, but for real, like just, you know, like I know Dunaway, you're right. There's stuff in everything and I'm breathing it in for now, right now, as far as I know.
There's stuff in everything.
But none of it is intentional and or none of it is deliberate. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. That's my argument is licking is intentionally taking in 100% of the germs because there's no reason to lick it other than to consume 100% of whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Whereas biting is mostly, nutrition.
Yeah, you're getting the food along with the thing, but it's still. Right. But then there's this caveat of, oh, there's poo in that apple. Okay, well I'm not eating it.
Right.
There's still,
like, I don't want to watch anybody kiss anybody because I'm like, that's great and all. A peck is fine, but like the French kissing, I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to look at it because I don't.
Yeah, I don't want to watch. I don't like watching that either.
I don't want to see that.
I saw somebody doing that. Where were we? Corner Road, St. George Boulevard. People who live in Southern Utah know where this is. Actually, we watched the car. Some of it was filmed there. But anyway, there's a couple on the side of the road over there, and they were making out, just macking hardcore on a bench. And more power to them, whatever. I don't care. But I don't want to look at them. I don't want to look at them slobber and tongue all over the place. I don't want to see it.
I don't understand why they put it in TV shows. I'm like, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great thing to be involved with, but it's not something I want to watch.
just like the death of Mad Max's wife and child. That can happen off screen.
I don't want to see that.
You know what? Hold on. I want to make a poster that says French kissing. It's a great thing to be involved with. I want to write that down.
But not watch. I don't want to see that.
That's really good, Brian. Sorry, Randy.
This movie starts with some people having sex out in a field and they're completely naked. And then they run away. And I couldn't help but wonder if they knew they were in the movie. Like, what if
those people came across? Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You got any clips of that?
No, not audio. But I thought it was so weird that you were going to snipe this poor couple. I'm like, they're just, let them have.
Oh, I think they were going to snipe him. He just, that's the only thing he had that he could binocular out to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just a pervert. Oh, you're right. Yeah. I guess he wasn't going to hurt anybody, but.
Anyway. Yeah. Use the tools that you're given.
Hey guys, talking about Raycon wireless earbuds. My favorite little earbuds. They're right here in front of me, in fact. All charged up, ready to go for the day. I got a bunch of stuff I got to do. It's going to put me outside for a bit, and I need my earbuds. So that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to use them. Oh, it's so great. It's never too early to start gift shopping for the holidays, by the way, especially because today you can save big on a gift that they'll use every day. Raycon wireless earbuds, RAYCON is how you spell that name. And we've teamed up with Raycon for a limited time. They're offering 20% off your order at buyraycon.com/filmsack. I really love these things. I kind of had to re-up my commitment to exercise this last week. And as a result, I am out walking about in the cold. I love doing that. I love winter walks. And I'm wearing my Raycon buds. I'm also on the treadmill this morning, jogging. Guess what I had in my ears? Raycon wireless earbuds. Yeah, that's right. It's amazing, and I love them. And nobody else can hear them. I can't hear other people when they're trying to annoy me. Not that they're trying, you know, they're nice people and everything. But I can just focus on what I'm listening to, be it music or audiobooks or whatever. With seamless Bluetooth pairing and a comfortable noise-isolating fit, you can start listening right away. Keep your listening happening for hours. The audio quality is amazing, comparable to what you get from other premium brands, except Raycon start at about half the price, which is just nuts. So this holiday season, get them something they can use for calls or music, for work or play, at home or on the go, or pick up a pair for yourself. Trust me, you're going to use them every day. I do. You will too. Their newest model, by the way, is the Everyday E25 earbuds. They're their best ones yet. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and more compact design. And they just fit and just sound amazing. Go to buyraycon.com/filmsack today and get 20% off your Raycon order. But hurry, this offer is only available for a limited time only, and you don't want to miss it. That's buyraycon.com/filmsack to get 20% off your Raycons. buyraycon.com/filmsack. Okay, now we can do sound file.
Now we can do clips.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So here come these clips. They're coming at you fast and hard. I don't have a ton because this movie, again, it's not a dialogue-y movie, but there's some stuff. Like this annoying laughing when the guy was looking at the naked couple. All right, there's that guy. He's pretty great. Here's when you know you're screwed, when the guy uses the word snafu.
We are 100% snafu.
Snafu'd. Yeah, never said that.
Situation normal.
Yeah.
All fouled up. It's not all a. It's not a verb. I don't understand using it as a verb.
Snafu'd. Yeah, I don't either. You don't snafu something. Right.
And he didn't put a D at the end, which I figured that actually would be the way to use it. Oh, we are so snafu'd at this point.
Yeah, we're pretty. We got food right up the snaff.
All right, yeah, we're food.
We're food right up the snaff.
We're food.
I wrote what here because I don't know what he said. So you guys help me translate. Here you go.
Just have a mix, you know, piece from here and a piece from there.
What?
Oh yeah,
from here and a piece from there.
Yeah, that's our cue.
Oh, he's talking about building a car, right? He's yeah. Build it all like the piece from here and a piece from there.
Got it. All right, I couldn't tell if they were trying to like. I don't know what they were doing there. It's fine.
Sure,
you can do whatever they want. Piers and Morton Joe. I mean, Toe Ripper Junior or Toe Cutter. Here you go.
Okay. Anything I say. What a wonderful philosophy you have.
It's a weird sentence, isn't it? What a wonderful. Normally people say you have a wonderful philosophy, but he says, what a wonderful philosophy you have. There's something weird about that.
Yeah.
I like it. He's my pick for putting a plastic thing on and hoses on his face and meeting me at the gates of Valhalla. All right, moving on. Knight Rider.
Well.
Now, the reason I played that one is, I want to do this one more time. There's this weird sound after he yells Knight Rider.
Knight Rider!
What is that? What's that about?
Yeah, like an electronic keyboard with a scream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this movie is full of both unusual sound effects that come in from nowhere and unusual imagery that comes in from nowhere. Mm. Like, when someone dies and you suddenly see a close-up of a crow for a second.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The birds were weird. Every time somebody died in Australia, apparently a bird shows up. Oh, look, death. Yes.
Yes, death. Car.
There was a crow, and was it a hawk? It flashed by so fast, I meant to go back and look, but I think there was a hawk on the one of the bikers that got killed too.
Do yourselves a favor, by the way. I've told Ibit this before and I never could find a good clip in real time, so I won't try now. But if you've never heard a raven or a crow speak, and they do speak, they're very good at mimicking.
That's weird.
It's so weird, dude. They are so weird. Cause parrots are like, what are you doing?
down, man. Freaking shut up, man.
Like that. And a raven's like, hello, I'm way down here. Like, it's a low, weird, guttural thing. It's really weird. Recommend it. All right.
Recommend it.
Here's a throat thinny. Oh, thingy. Throat thingy. Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys ever know anyone that had to do that? Like, they had their
throat out? No, I'm surprised.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen it. You know, it's on.
I've been around it.
South Park. Yeah. I've seen it in a million things as a reference. Like, people from Vietnam War got their throat shot out, and they have to hold a little machine up to talk. But I've never.
Yeah, my stepmom's dad had one. He had cancer, and they had his voice box removed, and he would often use that.
Could you understand it and stuff?
Oh yeah. And, you know, most of the time I can understand. But I think
he didn't say much,
and it was usually very direct sentences. You know. He wasn't going to pull that thing out to have some kind of, you know, weird conversation. It was all.
It's got to be brief, quick responses.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. That makes sense. Okay, here's Sunday dinner. This is everyone's favorite guy.
Look what's turned up for Sunday dinner.
All right, and then he goes on He's great.
Yeah.
He goes on to say this.
My favorite kind, female.
It's totally Froggy from the Little Rascals.
Oh my gosh, I'd forgotten all about Froggy.
Alfalfa.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the clip that you're going to use on TMS. I don't know why.
I might. I don't know. You never know when stuff's going to happen there. All right, I got this. I got some audio. This came from, let's see, a friend of, this may have been the girl herself sent this. This is Brian Ibbett's prom night, I guess. I think this is from the girl, the date. Doesn't give her name, though. Anyway, this was apparently part of your conversation.
What do you want from me?
That's her.
Don't change the subject.
Jeez.
Well, yeah. Well,
you're dark.
Sometimes you kind of talk slow so they understand what's going on.
Don't change
the subject, Mr. Parker.
We were waiting. The waiter was right there asking if she wanted to supersize her meal. And
okay. Well, then that's better than I was. Seemed more sinister, exactly. So that's fine.
Yes,
that's
like, fine. Come on.
All right. This next one has nothing to do with your prom night, but it is titled Grunt and Moan. So I'll play it here. Enjoy. Okay. There's that. Oh, and this is the final one. This is a great pain sound. We haven't had one like this in a while. There you go. I don't know what it is about that one, but it jumped out at me. Okay. On that note. The film sack checklist is available and ready to read. All the cop cars in this movie look like candy. Check. That's a thing. Only vaguely predictive of what would come later in these films. Check. And finally, too normal. Check. I'm going to say it was a little too normal. Not wacky enough. It's the first one. They didn't know what they're doing yet. I get it. But, you know, need more whack.
I was going to say, your goose is cooked.
No. That was actually going to be my original
intro
Twitter post.
Oh, good thing.
That's all right. I have another one that I like. I was going to give you both, and I'm only going to give you the one.
What's the other one?
How generous. get it. What's the other one?
Yeah.
Well done. Connections aren't really a ton. We couldn't find any. Randy tried to track down some truck stuff. There's none. I mean, this is all done by people and their friends on a very local level. The only thing I would, you know, we've already talked about is that Toe Cutter is Immortan Joe from Fury Road. That's a big connection, but one that's obvious. So we're not going to do
connections. This thing only has Mad Max connections.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Right. Which isn't really the point of connections. So.
I guess there's a Lethal Weapon connection. There's a.
Yeah. You really want to.
As much as I don't like Mel Gibson and I wish that cancel culture actually was real, I kind of wish. I wish he had been in more Mad Max movies. Like he had been in, I can't figure out where he belongs in Fury Road, but I wish he.
Right.
Wanted like, him to make an appearance. Cameo?
He was supposed to originally. The original plan was this was, and then you wouldn't do it. There was some whole thing back in like the early aughts, or not early aughts, sorry, 2010, 2011, where Mel Gibson was supposed to be involved. And I got to find that reference to that, but there was some scripty thing that had him being Max and he was older, and it all sounds like a bad idea now, but you know, I'd have been okay with a cameo. It's like having, what's his name from Planet of the Apes was in that
Charlton Heston.
Yeah. He showed up as a monkey in the, in the newer
or the other Ghostbuster care actors appearing in the female Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't mind when they do that. It's fine.
I'm really, really torn on the idea of and then 30 years later, we see the same character from an action movie play the same role and he's elderly now. I don't love that. I really don't. Yeah. But at the same time, when they're like, there's a new Blade Runner movie coming, I'm like, Harrison Ford, maybe?
Yeah, but Harrison Ford, see, they did it right with Harrison Ford and they did it wrong with Harrison Ford. Bringing him back as Indiana Jones and saying, hey, at 75, he's pretty active, isn't he? No, that didn't work. It looked bad. But bring him back as Deckard is amazing in that. He was so good in that Blade Runner follow-up.
He was.
I think that comes down to script writing.
That said, the new, you know, they're working on another Indiana Jones movie. I don't want it without Harrison Ford.
I don't want them to replace.
But I want them to use him right.
I just think this.
I want him to have a son that kills him.
That script was just bad. So yeah. I think we can blame it more on that and less on Harrison Ford. He's not the problem. That movie was just bad.
But he agreed to it. He read the script. Don't think he just can't showed up one day. He read that script. He knew what he was getting into.
What I mean
it belongs in a museum.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm talking specifically about like these lead action people, right? Yeah. Like if you tell me there's another Indiana Jones movie coming and you say Jonathan Rhys-Davies is going to be Sala and he's going to be old, I'll be like, okay, that's fine. I'm fine with that. That's fine. Yeah. I do not have a problem with that. Yeah. But part of me really, really wants to see Harrison Ford in a Raiders of the Lost Ark movie, and part of me feels like that's a terrible idea. He is an old man.
Yeah. I don't know. Old man. Age, it's also different for men than women. Like, the older male actors tend to get more work in their golden years than women do. And that's annoying. Right.
Yeah, they're starting to change, though, luckily.
It's starting to change, and you're not wrong. And there's always been examples. Judi Dench is amazing. And what's her name who played the queen? I always forget her name. Francine McGillicuddy.
The
movie, the queen. Helen Mirren. There you go.
Judi Dench. Oh, Helen Mirren. Okay.
Yeah. All those people are great. Like, there are definitely examples of amazing aging actors who are female. But way and more often, you're going to see Mel
Linda
Gibson
Hamilton
show up in something.
And the new Terminator stuff. I thought she was bad egg.
Yeah.
I thought she looked like
she's
she
great.
Could do exactly. So,
yeah.
Again, that. I'm trying to draw a line around a very small set of things, right? Like, I like the Expendables movies, but those are about action stars aging, right? Like that. Right. The whole point is that these guys are too old for this, right? Yeah. And like, but I don't.
See, I don't like it, and this is my problem, and people would give me crap. You know, people give me crap about not liking the last Toy Story movies because they're all depressing because I'm like, they're at their end of their life. In my mind, they had all, you know, they went on to live whatever happily ever after story you want to tell yourself. But when you bring them back and you go, oh, here they are, and they're suffering, and things are bad. And I'm like, I didn't want to know that.
I've personally taken issue with you and your Toy Story hatred, but
yeah. I'm like, I don't want to know Andy was a real dick. I didn't need to know that.
Was Andy a dick? I don't remember him being a dick. Was he a dick?
Or are you just thinking of Andy Dick?
Yeah, Andy Dick. I'm like, I didn't need to know that, you know, sad things happened and they got old. I mean, I wanted to believe they lived on forever in my mind.
Hey, did you just think of Andy Dick?
Exactly what I did.
That's amazing. Oh, that's such a dumb, wonderful joke. I love that. I'd love it. All right. Soundtrack great. I'd give it a CS for complete shit. It's not good. It's bad. It's a bad soundtrack.
Wait, even Licorice Road?
Look.
Can you imagine? The whole movie, I was imagining just take this movie as is and just lay in some AC/DC under all of those parts that where they're not talking.
Well,
like,
sure.
It would have been so.
And there goes the budget.
Yeah. But see, this is what Fury Road did to me. It ruined any previous Mad Max soundtracks. They're all bad compared to Junkie XL's take in Mad Max Fury Road.
I don't think they're bad. I think they're okay for the time.
Maybe. Yeah. But listen to this. I'm just going to play a thing for you. Okay.
Oh, sure.
Just a quick one. This won't get us any trouble because it's short. Where is it?
Oh, come on now. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Listen to this. Okay, it's playing.
That is short.
All right. Got a little build up, but give it a second here. This is when the storm is coming. In fact, the song is called Storm is Coming. I'm going to skip that a little bit. It's just, you can't compete with that.
Yeah.
Look.
It's so good. About this new stuff. Soundtrack of Fury Road is
sorry,
so good.
Just blew out my hearing. What?
Sorry, it's a little loud, but look, it's. So,
I'd like to see you make a better movie for a cash equivalent of $400,000.
I'm not saying that it could have been done any different. And it's 79, and Junkie XL wasn't even born yet. Like, there's a lot of reasons why you can whatever, but it's just made it hard for me to accept those older soundtracks, like including the newer, you know, like Thunderdome and all that. It's just not very good.
But it's Tina Turner.
I know it's Tina Turner.
I actually kind of like her in that movie, but I'm torn.
I can't wait to watch that for film sake. Yeah, when is that going to be streaming?
Yeah, when are we doing that?
Please, someone lay Bon Scott AC/DC into this movie and it'll be amazing.
Yeah. All of it. Yeah, actually, it would have fit really well. The biker stuff, the car stuff. You're totally right. Okay. Now what? Oh, the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. And I think this week we'll just throw everybody off by starting with Randy.
Mad Max. A couple of honeymooners who live an idyllic life in a cabin on the beach take their baby to grandma's estate on holiday, and on the way, they get some ice cream. I give it a solid 5 out of 7 ice creams.
Wow. A lot of ice cream. Hey, Dunaway, your turn.
Brain freeze. Mad Max, like deciding between sawing through handcuffs in 10 minutes or through your ankle in 5, but you really only have 2. Hashtag sometime in the future. Hashtag now. Hashtag 2020.
The editing of this movie was so cruel. He says you have 10 minutes. That thing explodes 42 seconds after.
Yeah. It was great, though.
Which is what I couldn't figure out if he did it on purpose or not. I'm like, haha, you saw your star sawing
totally
your leg.
Totally did it on purpose.
Yeah.
He's mad.
Yeah, he's mad.
He's mad.
Super mad. All right. Brian Ibbett.
Mad Max, always under construction road.
Oh, this reminds me, the part of the film that was the worst, the absolute worst thing in this movie was that we're in a nearly post-apocalyptic future where things are breaking down. It's an almost lawless society and the roads are brand spanking new. Yeah. They look perfect and amazing. Yeah. The paving truck just came past this part of the road. It's so wrong. Bad.
Yeah, they got lines in the road and everything. Come on.
Well, sure. I mean, you've got a post-apocalyptic future, and you have to keep the roads. Like, that's essential workers right there.
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. How else are you going to get around?
Those roads were so good.
They were pretty good roads. They weren't very Fury yet. It wasn't an empty ocean bed quite yet.
Less furious roads.
And it is weird. When I think of Mad Max, I don't think of green trees and grass on the sides of things. Like, that's so foreign to me in those.
Well, it's because it's just a few years in the future as opposed to the next movies, which are a lot more years in the future.
Yeah. Although, I mean, if you're going to look at them chronologically, how many years pass between this and Road Warrior? Yeah, I don't know. Because it seems like a lot changed.
What was the actual time, like release date difference? 5 years? 6 years?
85 was it? Hold on.
No, that's Thunderdome, right? 85 is Thunderdome?
82 or 81. Is Road Warrior,
okay,
right?
only 2 years. Jeez. Is that true? Yeah. That's crazy. Thunderdome was 85, right? Between that, he did an episode of the TV series, The Dismissal, and an episode of Twilight
Zone. You've been
dismissed. I didn't know that. We've talked about this. We have. I just keep forgetting that Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, the segment on the Twilight Zone movie, was his. He did that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. 83. He did that. That's crazy. And then after Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, right after that same year, he directed the Tina Turner We Don't Need Another Hero video short.
Well, I wonder if he directed or just clips. The fact that they used clips from the movie.
Yeah, there you go. I think it was his clip.
Director's credit.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
Didn't the credits run? The credits ran with that song, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
That's so bad. Oh, my gosh. I like her, and I like that song.
That's a different song.
I like her stuff fine. I think Tina Turner's a badass. I'm like, none of that's a problem. I just don't think you end your Mad Max movie with a Tina Turner song. That's just weird.
Well, but, you know, that's not uncommon to, like, if there's a single from the soundtrack, you end the credits with it. That's not unusual.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, it's a fair point. Let's play this again. Just kidding. All right. Moving on. Where the hell was I? Oh, alternate titles. Look at this. Oh, man. This is crazy. This little card just handed to me. This was almost called How to Start a Filmmaking Career with $100 and a Case of Beer, or Immortan Toe.
Oh.
All right. It could have been Joe Cutter, or I would have said Joe Ripper is what I would have said. Anyway.
Right.
A couple of quick emails for you fine folks. This comes to us via the email address, which is filmsack@gmail.com. We got one from Dustin who says, I am in the middle of watching Cutthroat Island on Amazon Prime. Oh, wow. Now I know why everyone disparages it. Why has this not been an episode? Cover it quickly because I don't want to have to watch it again when you do. Thanks for all the wonderful entertainment and dreariest of times, Dustin. It's been on our list on and off for a while. I didn't know it was on Prime. That probably means we ought to at least look at it again.
Over the next couple of months, we're watching a lot of things on Amazon Prime. Get ready. We're basically shifting from Netflix to Amazon
Prime. Now's the time to re-up your Amazon Prime subscription,
yeah,
if you haven't.
If you don't have it, good luck. Another email quickly here from Caroline Fortuna. That's also her stance. She's Fortuna. Anyway, she says, hey, Scott, Brian, and Randy. I don't get many visitors while hiding from the Rona, but my mom stopped in to visit briefly. While she was watching Blacklist on Netflix, James Spader said the word scrutiny on the show. Yeah. But she immediately responded with a loud rendition of the film sack meme, the John Mahoney, Mahoney, isn't it? Anyway, he put Mulaney.
Mahoney, I think so. Yeah.
Pronouncing scrutiny, which I immediately echoed. It was a random awesome moment for our fandom of your show. I just want to take a second and thank you guys for all that you do. The show has been a source of happiness in a very rough year for us. My dad passed away in the spring. Terrible thing to go through with the rest of what 2020 has been. We've been having a pretty hard time, but FilmSack has helped us greatly with our morale. You are all breathtaking. Be well, be safe, Carolyn.
Aww.
Carolyn.
Thank you.
Carolyn? Caroline. I'm not sure. It's a Y, so I think Carolyn.
Right.
Well, Carolyn, we're happy to hear that we can provide some solace.
If there's no E at the end, I would say it's definitely Carolyn.
Should be, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Say it right.
I hate getting people's
names. Say your words.
But I'll play this for you and your mom.
Scrutiny.
There you go. Enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's John Mahoney, but it's not impossible that John Mulaney also has used the word scrutiny at some point.
Right. He's telling that it's not unusual to be loved by anybody story. Right,
What's New Pussycat.
Oh, No What's New Pussycat.
love that. Oh, my God.
One of the greatest comedy bit things.
The Salt and Pepper Diner, I think, is the name of that bit.
It's so funny. If you haven't seen his stand-up stuff on Netflix, people, you should be watching it. All right. Jamie has provided us with yet another compilation of Ibbot's prom date clips. And this is the clip called, because we have three of these. We have prior to, this is now during, and then we have one that's after the date. So this is all during the date. And it's about 2 minutes. Enjoy. This is when she wouldn't let him kiss her at prom. And so this is how that went down.
I give you a buffalo nickel if you'll calm down just a little bit.
There you go. This is you talking to the other people because you guys had a total of two other couples with you. Here's what you said to them during dinner.
You guys can sit down in your little chairs and make fun of me. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, it must have been a bad night. This is Brian Ibbett, 1987, prom. He said this sometime during the night.
I'm going to give you a few seconds before I come.
All right, Scott. Move on.
Move on to
the next one.
Context.
This is actually your principal at the school who was like chaperoning that night, saying this to you and your date.
I hate to be ungentlemanly, but we're going to need your clothes.
Jeez Louise.
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Brian tries to make his move. All right, so you're trying to make your move that night, and this was the response.
What are you doing, Brian?
There you go.
Finally. My prom date had a very masculine voice.
Yeah, I don't know what the context is. But
that's my nose, genius. These are my lips.
Oh, wow. Brian, did you confuse her nose with her lips?
I did. Oh, I was trying to pick her lips, and she says, no, this is my nose.
These are my lips. This is the night things got weird. This is a weird prom night. Check it out.
Five women in white.
surrounded by priests in red.
You're right. It'd be sacrificed.
Jeez, you guys have weird proms, dude. Brian Ibbett's prom date when he looked at the stars with the date, okay? This is what you said when you looked at the stars.
There's nothing out there but noble gases and carbon compounds, and you're wasting your time.
Jeez, what a rotten date you must have been. This is Brian Ibbett's prom date from when he tried to take her home early on prom, and this was her response.
I thought we'd drink some vodka to get warmer.
There you go.
Oh, nice.
That's amazing. Jamie, thank you for these. We have one more. That'll be next week, and it'll be for the after.
The post, yes.
Post coitus. Oh, wait. Post date is what
I mean. Well, that's the thing. I think there was a clip there that was definitely in the post. But,
Oh, yeah. So there you go. Thank you for that, Jamie. As always, wonderful stuff. You can find him on Twitter at TMS Mashups. He does a lot of stuff for our morning show as well. So go check that out. All right, our next film is Gone in 60 Seconds, the Nicolas Cage edition of the film. Not to be confused with the original 60s something? Who knows? When was that? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No one knows.
Possibly know.
No. How could you possibly know? You're supposed to fill it in. It's world building. So
Steve
anyway.
McQueen, right? Yeah.
Was it? No, it was that other guy with the mustache that reminded us of somebody. Anyway. I think we had this conversation.
Dad, don't watch that one.
Don't watch that one.
If you don't see Nicolas Cage, you're watching the wrong movie.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Basically, Jerry Bruckheimer back in this time frame was just looking for anything he could buy. Right.
Yep.
And it turns out there's this old movie that everybody hated called Gone in 60 Seconds. So yeah. Jerry Bruckheimer throws a bunch of money at Dominic Senna and they make an action movie, and it's so much better.
It's pretty fun. It's a fun movie.
HB
is my memory.
HB Halicki.
There you go. Came out the year 2000. I want to say June.
Directed by H.B. Halicki. Produced by H.B. Halicki. Written by H.B. Halicki and starring H.B. Halicki.
Shut up. Really?
I'm dead serious. Yeah. So don't watch that one.
H.B. Halicki is the original guy?
Yeah. Music by Ronald Halicki.
No. Really?
Okay.
Distributed by JB or HB Halicki Junkyard and Mercantile Company.
Wow.
I am excited that we're doing another Bruckheimer movie because it feels like we've done them all and it's like filling in the gaps.
Yep. I agree. It's been a while too since we've seen one of it may have even been like Bad Boys 2 or something. I don't even know.
The Rock, Armageddon, Top Gun. Yeah, they're all. We've seen them all almost. Yeah.
Is he doing anything now? What's Bruckheimer? I never feel like I see any Bruckheimer productions anymore. Is that just me or?
Maybe he's retired.
Could be. Yeah.
I'm just going to find this real fast.
Mm-hmm. He actually produced the new Top Gun Maverick movie.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe he's fine. He's just waiting for that one last chance.
Is that just pushed out to next year? Is it like
July?
Yes,
it's just pushed out to next year.
Yeah. Oh, Bad Boys for Life was his too. Okay.
Yeah, he produced all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, so the most recent one was only a couple years ago.
Okay. Well, then he's still got stuff to say, I guess. Anyway, so we will be back next week with Gone in 60 Seconds between now and then. Oh, and that's, by the way, streaming on Netflix, is it? I believe. Crap. I like to tell them where they got to go look.
I think Amazon Prime.
Is it Prime?
Double checking. Yes, Amazon Prime.
Okay, Amazon Prime for this one. So that's Amazon Prime for Gone in 60 Seconds. Nicolas Cage, not Halicki. Okay, that's it. Thank you all for being here. Big thanks to all of you for listening for as long as you have been. I hope you're having a decent Thanksgiving week. Try to be safe and not put grandma at risk, will you? Just be careful.
Please
don't
spread this thing, folks.
Please. Let's try to smash that curve one more time. Filmsack.com is our website. You can find us on there. You can also find us on Twitter at Filmsack. Send us your emails, filmsack@gmail.com, and leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Female.
We'll see you next time.
Female.
Oh, whoops. Hold on.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Ow!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.